Welcome to Reformation Gospel. Discover the healing truth, and all your efforts to be accepted by God will finally be brought to rest.
So last time I was talking about Matthew 16, verse 28, and we looked at the word see in that sentence. I'll read it out to you again. Verily I say unto you, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. And that word seeing, I explained, is a reference to a mental perception, an internal comprehension, even closer to revelation. And when you look at it that way, then a lot of it makes sense when you look at the other verses, which I will refer to in a minute, which also use the same word see or seeing. Just a few things I'd like to point out from this verse as Jesus made this statement. Again, I explained that he was talking to a group of people saying that at that time, some of them would not die really, but would still be alive until they have that insight, until they get that perception, until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Interesting is that often this coming in his kingdom is understood as the second coming of Christ. However, and I'm not saying it's not so, however, there are some elements that are often not understood or explained. And for the fact that, for example, the word coming is directional. We've assumed that this is a coming from direction of, from heaven towards earth. However, this word coming can also mean entrance. And when we look at it from that sort of angle, the word coming as in entering into his kingdom, then I look at, for example, let's see if I can find it quickly, Daniel, that's Daniel chapter 7 verse 13, and of course this is hundreds of years before the actual birth of Christ. And Daniel prophesied, he had a vision rather, he says here, I kept looking in the night visions, verse 13, that's Daniel chapter 7, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming, see that word coming again, and he came up to, the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him. Now, this is clearly referring to Jesus. And I believe that these two verses I just read out to you are very much interlinked with each other. clouds are often used as a signifying of judgment. When you look at a preterist eschatology, and we can see that Christ did return after, well, almost 40 years, 37 years approximately, after his ascension, he then came back in judgment upon apostate Israel. The fact that Jerusalem was besieged for 3.5 years, which also fully complies with prophecies in Daniel as well as Revelation, and then the destruction of the city, the destruction of the temple, and was a finalization and abolishing of the Sinaitic covenant, and a release and a ratification of the new covenant of grace for once and for always. And you look at this situation where Jesus ascended after his resurrection, he went to heaven, and he is, and I believe that's what Daniel is talking about, he's coming up or entering into his kingdom. I believe this is referring to a rather enthronement or a crowning of, or the coronation, if you will, of Jesus, the Anointed One, as King of Kings. And it is therefore also a fulfillment of the Davidic covenant, which came with the promise that somebody from the direct descendant of King David would take the kingdom and would forever reign. And this was referring to Christ, to Yehoshua, who is a direct in the physical sense, a direct descendant of the genealogy of David. And yes, son of man, but also son of God. So that's a different topic again. You can see how easy it is to get sidetracked, right? So Daniel says he kept looking in the night visions and beheld with the clouds of heaven, as in a time of judgment. That's what clouds stand for in this context. Every time when you read about the Son of Man appearing on the clouds of heaven, it's talking about that second coming in judgment upon apostate Israel at the time of the first century. And this would have happened then between 66 and 70 AD. Daniel says, one like a Son of Man was coming. And in this situation, I think this is part of the coming, the entrance into, if you take that word coming as, and what it is, in fact, directional, entering into his kingdom, appearing before the Ancient of Days. The Ancient of Days also is a title that was used. We know that Jesus appeared before the Father, but at this point, it now becomes heaven's court. Because what Jesus did is he went into court, just like, you know, we use courts here. You have in the United Kingdom, we have magistrates' court, family court, we have civil courts, and we have the Crown Court and High Court. And each of these courts have their own order of protocol, and they must be upheld. And some courts have a different protocol than others again. This here is referring to heaven's court. Jesus appears before the Ancient of Days. Remember the revelation that John had of Jesus as the Lamb of God who appeared before the throne and then took the seals. And so we can say that Jesus entered into, yes, came before the throne of grace, appeared before the throne, before the Ancient of Days, before the Judge of the universe, in heaven's court, and his blood is presented. And by doing so, he ratifies that covenant of grace, which was first initiated when Jesus died on the cross, when his blood was being shed. But he also took his blood into heaven's court, and through that pleading the case for humanity, Jesus spoke for the people and presents and pleads his case for the people before the Ancient of Days, and establishes the fact that his blood initiated a new covenant of forgiveness, which was of course first initiated at the cross, at his death, and then ratified and confirmed and established when he enters into the throne room before the throne of grace enters heaven's court and pleads his case before the Ancient of Days, the judge of the universe, and thereby silences the accuser of the brethren, Satan himself, who was Lucifer before, who did nothing else but accuse mankind to God and God to mankind. And that whole structure of an argument of accusation against God and against people would fail the moment Jesus' blood is presented. That's why this is so important, because he establishes a new covenant with new terms and conditions, and they are forgiveness. And when Jesus died on the cross, he didn't pay by being punished by the Father and the wrath of God coming on him. No, because then it would be payment and not forgiveness. What Jesus did by shedding his blood and establishing a covenant of forgiveness is that our debt of sin, our guilt of sin, was forgiven. Not paid off. Not Jesus paid the penalty that, or paid the price that we could not pay. No, Jesus, forget that bit. Jesus established a new covenant under new terms and conditions, those being forgiveness, by which the debt that we owed was cancelled. Whew. Right, okay. I did a bit of a preaching there on Daniel 7:13, but it leads me on to this, and it's building upon that word seeing from Matthew 16, verse 28, because what Jesus was saying is that some of those people whom he was preaching and teaching to, he said that some of them would still be alive at his coming, at his entrance. He said, some will be standing here which shall not taste death, or will not die, until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Or let's say, entering into his kingdom, and therefore receive his coronation and be crowned King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And because a judgment was then confirmed, the fact that forgiveness was established, Jesus was raised from the dead when he was justified. He was made sin and then he was justified. And when he was justified and entered into his kingdom and pled his case on behalf of the people, so were we justified. And that's the judgment. Yeah, and I said clouds are a reference to judgment. Immediately afterwards, Jesus is crowned King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He then returns. Now, bear in mind that this took a generation who was alive at that time. And from the time of his ascension, remember the book of Acts, when these two men in clothed in white spoke to the disciples, and the disciples were looking and gazing into heaven, seeing Jesus ascend on clouds. Remember, he then appears unto the Ancient of Days, as according to Daniel. And these two men said to the disciples, he will return the same way. Well, that's what happened. And Jesus returned as King of Kings, but he returned on the clouds of heaven, and he came back in judgment. This judgment was twofold. Yes, humanity was forgiven based on the new covenant of forgiveness and made righteous in the resurrection life of Christ. But those who were alive back then who had rejected their Messiah, although eternally they were redeemed, physically they were still holding on to an old covenant, which the book of Hebrews calls the Sinaitic covenant with the law of Moses, an old covenant, and according to the terms of and conditions of that covenant, if they broke that covenant, the wrath of God would come upon them. And so the wrath and the judgment and the vengeance of God was not something that came on Jesus on the cross, but it came on apostate Israel, meaning those who had fallen into idolatry, the worship of Baal and Ashtaroth, and basically Satan, and practicing Luciferian idolatrous religious systems with human sacrificing, etc. You can look into it, it's all there, and the Bible talks about it, but you'd have to be willing to face that horrible truth. And again and again, the people of Israel fell into that horrible pagan practice. And then they repented and renewed the covenant. But eventually, they suffered the consequences of breaking the covenant. And by default, by rejecting their Messiah at that point and holding on to the terms and conditions of that old covenant, according to that old covenant, the wrath of God had to come upon them. And so physically, they suffered at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. And they suffered terribly. I think the historian Josephus records something like 1.3 million Jews were slaughtered throughout that period, especially in the last period of that siege. And others were taken as slaves and taken to other countries. So, for example, there is another similar type of statement Jesus makes, and that's in Matthew chapter 26, and that will be in verse 64. Jesus said unto him, and this is Caiaphas, the high priest, at the time when after Jesus was arrested and placed before the high priest. And Caiaphas said, I adjure thee, that's in verse 63, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus said unto him, thou hast said. Actually, the proper translation there is, that's what you teach. Nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. And of course, when the high priest heard that, he rent his clothes, saying he had spoken blasphemy. And why did Caiaphas decide to have such a drastic response to that statement? First of all, by the priest doing so, renting his clothes, he actually disqualifies himself from being a high priest, because that was an unlawful thing to do according to the law of Moses. Remember, they had to wear these special robes all according to the instructions in the Torah. And by him tearing it all or renting his clothes, he was actually breaking the law. And yet, so righteously he did it. And that's because he knew when Jesus said that he would see the Son of Man coming. Let me read that correctly. Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Caiaphas knew he was referring to Daniel chapter 7, that verse 13, I believe, I just read out to you. And they all knew that set of scriptures. So Jesus was saying he is the Son of Man who would appear before the Ancient of Days and call out judgment as he pleaded the case, as he entered into his kingdom and receive his coronation and be seated at the right hand of power, the right hand of the Father, basically. And then coming in the clouds of heaven. So this is an entrance into the kingdom as well as a returning back to the earth in judgment. A judgment was established that humanity was forgiven and made righteous in Christ, and therefore are spiritually, eternally redeemed. But there was going to be a judgment according to the old Sinaitic covenant, which would physically destroy or cause those who rejected the Messiah and who were holding on to that old covenant, Sinaitic covenant and law of Moses. Then if they wanted to hold on to that ship, they would have to go as that ship would sink and therefore would perish. And this is why the Apostle John said in chapter 3, verse 16, that God so loved the world. The word world is the word cosmos, which also means the masses of ungodly people. God so loved the world. If you go into the Greek, it will say something like the ungodly masses who were against Christ. So God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that those who would believe on him would not perish. And that word perish is directly to do with a physical destruction. And it is actually referring to that destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the temple and the abolishing of the old Sinaitic covenant once and for always. I know that it is a standardized popular verse, John 3:16, to preach to people, and that's amazing, but that is not hermeneutically correct if you take the context and history of prophetic scriptures and everything that Jesus foretold and the apostles foretold that said that would happen in their near future during their generation. And Caiaphas was actually still alive during the siege of Jerusalem, and he will have had some perception, just like Jesus said, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. You know, when Jesus told him this, he was saying, you will have a revelation of Jesus. You will have a revelation of the Messiah, of the Anointed One, as King of Kings, and the judgment that will come upon you for not accepting this reality. Massive truth, powerful truth.
For more information, go to reformationgospel.com.